Hello and welcome to another episode of Why We Love. My name's David.
And I'm Moxie.
And this week we are talking about the two best video game movie adaptations, probably. Sonic the Hedgehog and Pokemon Detective Pikachu.
Yeah, I think I agree, actually. I think they are two of the best when it comes to video game movies, surprisingly.
Yeah.
For me, anyway. Because, you know, like, when the Sonic the Hedgehog movie was announced, I wasn't really sure how I felt about it. Part of me felt, I'm probably just going to ignore that. You know, it's not made for me. It's fine. But a small part of me was kind of invested just because I grew up with Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, go on.
I was going to say, I made the decision not to show my dad because he's like the one who was like a mad keen, like, OG Sonic fan.
Yes.
And I told him, do not watch this trailer. It will kill you. But I was, the original trailer fascinated me.
The one before they did the restyle.
Yeah. Because it, well, the first they had, it was like, I've never seen like most things when they're, I guess we're talking about Sonic first, so, but like,
yes.
The way most things do advertising, they tease a bit, they tease a bit, they tease a bit, and then the bulk of the advertising comes out. Mm-hmm. And usually it's like a build-up and a ta-da! This was like watching people slowly unveiling like a car crash where someone had been decapitated in the wreckage. Like, it was like first they released that silhouette of Sonic where he was... Yes. Just like looked as if he was 6 foot tall and really jacked.
Yeah.
And then they released that poster where it was Sonic taking a photo of his legs on the Golden Gate Bridge.
Right, okay.
And it was showing like the blue like streak he leaves behind, like following him. And yeah. Someone on Twitter, as people on Twitter do with film posters, had worked out that the angle Sonic is sitting at, and if the entirety of the poster is the photo he's taken, then he would have had to have been holding the phone directly in front of his dick.
How much time do these people have on their hands?
I mean, they have a lot. I mean,
my God, who's that invested in a shot, in a PR shot for a film where they're like,
Well, once I'd seen it, it turns out I was invested in it. I was like, this is weird. And then the trailer came out where it was this gross, lanky mutant thing with... like teeny tiny Donald Trump hands and like human teeth, and the song they played in the background was the you know, favorite among all the kids, Gangster's Paradise.
Oh my God.
And I was just like, what is this?
Yes, I remember when the original picture or trailer dropped and everybody was like, what the hell is this? Those human teeth. Like, and the fur looked weird and his nose was weird. Like, he had this weird, like, muzzle type thing.
Oh,
he just looked a mess. But, like, it was kind of setting a precedent in a way, because I have never heard of... you know, a trailer being released, the backlash to that trailer making the people who made the film go back and redesign their character. I have never heard of that.
Yeah. it's weird because on the one hand, like, I have never seen anything that is quite so deserving of unanimous hatred.
Absolutely.
Like, when it happened, I was like, because someone would have, like, I don't understand how it got from the conception stage to being released, like, for human consumption. Like, when The Mummy came out, the Tom Cruise one, I thought it was fine, but one of the trailers, when they released it, they'd edited it together wrong so that the dramatic music that's playing when the plane crashes was gone. So you could just hear the rush of wind and Tom Cruise screaming. And without the dramatic music, it is very, very off-putting.
Yeah.
And that was like a big cock up, and they I think released a slew of trailers and TV spots and basically did as much damage control as was possible.
Yeah.
Whereas the trailer for Sonic, they put that out into the world. It was like, yep, that's fine.
But they listened to the criticism, which I don't know is, well, it's good and it's bad, I suppose, in a way.
I was going to say,
I keep speaking over you.
No, sorry, I was just going to say, I agree with you. It's one of those things where it's a very much a double-edged sword, I think.
Isn't it? Because that kind of gives people a bit more of a license to complain more and feel like their complaints should be heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And usually, the people who are shouting the loudest on Twitter should not be listened to, ever.
Absolutely. And I'm one of those people that kicks and screams on Twitter, but we should not be listened to as a group. but for good or for bad, they changed Sonic, and he looks 100 times better for it.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he's cute now. Like,
yes, he's not terrifying. He's cute.
Yeah,
and I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Especially, like I say, I was a big Sonic fan. Like, Sonic the Hedgehog is my absolute favourite game ever.
Oh, really? Wow.
Ever. aside from, like, Mortal Kombat and Tekken and Soul Calibur and those sorts of things, honest to God, Sonic the Hedgehog, I suppose, really, it was one of the first video games I'd ever played.
Yeah.
Because I'm old. Let us never forget. I am old. So the Mega Drive came out, I think, in 91, 92, maybe. So I was 10 or 11 when that came out and was very fortunate. My older brother bought one and gave it to me. And yeah, I'd spent an insane amount of time playing Sonic the Hedgehog. I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. I still do. It's so full of joy. It's just so easy. Run, jump. Run, jump. It's mindless, wonderful. And the music, oh, I'll never forget it. It's like seared into my brain. So like I say, I was a little bit invested in it, but I also was very aware that Sonic has changed massively since I last played it.
Oh, yeah. And not for the better.
No, I remember, I don't know, maybe early 2000s, there was like a resurgence of Sonic, and they had changed the gameplay from being
good.
See, I'm not a gamer. Yes. I don't know what the term is. You know when it's like a scrolling game? You just scroll?
Oh, from like a side-scroller.
Platform. Yes, side-scroller. Thank you. It had changed from that medium to this weird 3D, like, normal game, I guess. And I hated it. I hated it. You couldn't just run and jump. You had to make your way around different objects, and it was all done in this different world, and I just could not get on board with it at all. But I appreciate...
No, go on. Finish your thing.
I was just going to say, but I appreciate for a lot of kids at that time, that was probably their first introduction to Sonic. I was just like, this movie of Sonic isn't going to be made for me. It's going to be made for younger people who probably have a different connection to the game.
Fair.
That's it.
I was going to say, the only thing that I can think of, and it's not even an improvement, it's just one of those things that, is that the new horrible, awful 3D Sonic is responsible for creating a genre of music that is called butt rock.
What?
Yeah, have you not heard? Well, the band that does, now, how's this for tragic? The band that does all the butt rock for all the modern 3D Sonic games are called Crush 40. And right. The reason they're called that is because the band was set up by a guy who reached the age of 40, had a midlife crisis, formed a band with the vow of crushing 40.
I don't know whether to be impressed or sad, because that is both the greatest thing and, like you say, tragic.
Well, he set up a band that did music for the Sonic games.
Well, I mean
he did pioneer the genre of butt rock, so that's
butt rock. I have never heard of that. I'm googling as we speak. Butt rock. Nothing but rock.
But oh, I was good. You're just going to get okay. Sites.
Sorry,
about
carry on.
Stones,
yes, right? I am. Continue.
I mean, that was it. I hate the new.
That was it.
The new
games. You know, he's out there. He's making music. He's probably getting very well paid for it. So good on him. And as somebody fastly approaching 40, like, I am staring down the barrel of 40. And I too have that, what have I done with my life? I've been saying for years that I want to start a band. How tragic is that? There's always someone in your village that thinks they're a rapper. You know, it's one of those. So on the one hand, I can, yes, see it as a bit sad. But also, I'm like, you go, girl, get yours. Live the dream. Yeah. But anyway, coming back, I surprised myself when I watched Sonic the Hedgehog, the movie, because I wasn't expecting much. I really, really wasn't. My expectations were low. And unexpectedly, it's a goddamn delight.
Yeah, it is.
It just is.
Yeah,
it's a delight.
It's weirdly good.
Isn't it? And like when we said we were going to do the episode, part of me was like, oh, we're not going to have much to talk about though, because aside from saying, yeah, it was a good film, what else do I have to say about it? And then when I watched it the second time around, it was just as much fun. And I just surprised myself. I really wasn't expecting much. So I'm guessing you enjoyed it as well then.
Yeah, it's not as bad as it could have been.
Oh, absolutely. And when you consider video game films in general, you know, they tend to be pretty terrible.
Yeah.
It was a nice change of pace to have something that was actually really good and enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounded convincing. Yeah. Are you all right there? Did you get waylaid by something?
No, I was just like thinking it over in my head.
I really like, this is such a little sad thing, but you know, at the beginning of a movie when you get the big Paramount or TriStar or Orion, whatever. God, I'm old. you know, what is it called? Not the company. The studio. You get the studio title come up. I really like it when a film messes with that logo and sort of does something that ties into the theme of the film. So there's, like, for example, Scott Pilgrim. It's all done in that kind of...
The pixely thing.
Yeah, 8-bit or whatever. I really like that Sonic did the same thing. Started off with the rings circling the Paramount mountain. I like that.
Yeah. I think it's Transformers did that a bunch as well.
Yeah. There's something about it. I always think, oh, that's cool. If I ever made a film and 20th Century Fox or whatever, I'd want to do something to their logo. I'd want to do a little wink and a nod to people. I don't know why it tickles me, but it always does. But one thing I don't fully understand, and maybe you know about it, I don't know, but Sonic the Hedgehog starts off with Sonic on his own planet, I believe, and his guardian, if you will, is a giant owl. Like, what's that about?
I mean,
there was no owl in the games.
It could have been a loving homage to that classic Greg Davis stand-up bit where he talks about performing oral sex on a 6-foot owl. It probably wasn't.
Probably wasn't. It's just weird. I was like, who's this giant owl? I mean, let's just take the whole owl looking after a hedgehog thing aside. Because, you know, out in the real world, that's probably not going to happen. That owl will eat that hedgehog.
Oh, fuck yeah, it would, wouldn't it?
Right? I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe owls don't really go for hedgehogs. Well, I just felt like, okay, that's a turn, but I'm fine with that, you know. You Who's say to that say an owl much? Can't raise a hedgehog? Who's to say?
Well, she may well have, like, you know, because Sonic talks about his own world.
Mm.
And it's... He he's in a village. Like, there's other houses in those trees.
Mm-hmm.
But there's fuck all of anyone around, is there?
Yeah.
She's just eaten all the other hedgehogs.
Dark.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a bit strange, and I still don't fully understand the whole... or why even the whole, okay, you're in danger from these, whatever the hell they were. They looked like Knuckles, right?
Yeah, they were like, yeah.
Little raccoon kind of looking, whatever the hell. There you go. Yeah, and then it's like, oh, we've got these rings and I can go to different dimensions or planets or whatever through the rings. It's all very fast and very, this is just how it is. I'm in danger, throw the ring, oh, I'm on Earth. Like, I was just a little bit like, but why? It doesn't...
Because they needed a plot contrivance to have Sonic come to Earth, because they're incapable of making films for children where the otherworldly creature stays in their own fucking planet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with Sonic coming to Earth, but... I was just a little bit like, what? That was all. It's all done, it feels like, within 2 minutes. It's like, here's Sonic. He's in peril. Now he's on Earth. And there wasn't a lot of explanation involved. Not, I suppose, that we really need it, but I don't know. It would have been nice to see a bit more of Sonic in his own world.
Yeah.
Before we throw him into danger, whatever.
Yeah. Well, because before they do all the, like, the explaining of, oh, lack thereof, all the stuff of Sonic on his home world.
Mm.
The film employs the greatest comedy trope of all time.
Go on.
Which is where it starts in the middle of a big action sequence, and then there's the needle scratch and it pauses.
Yeah.
And Sonic says the immortal words, you may be wondering how I got here.
Got here. Yeah.
Like, yeah. That is such a 2007 thing. It's just...
It is a bit, isn't it?
I loved it because when it happened, I was in the cinema. I was like, I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it like that, but you're right. That's a very old sort of, yeah, setup. What's his name? James Marsden? Is it James?
Yeah.
Yes. I'm not the biggest fan of his. I don't dislike him.
Like, when you need, like, a generic, charming, mildly attractive, but, like, not...
Yeah, that is exactly it.
Yeah.
And, you know, no offence to him, I'm sure he's a lovely guy. He's just not, you know, I don't... Because a lot of people love James Marsden. Like, he's got a huge fan following. I don't dislike him, but I don't love him either. So he wasn't much of a draw for me, but I did quite like his character.
Yeah, he's like...
He's just quite a sweet, everyday kind of guy.
Yeah, he is. He's just like... Well, it's the he's like that archetype of just like... I'm just a... small town guy, but I have dreams of the big city, and
yeah,
but I'm gonna go on a journey because of this fucking blue hedgehog.
You know, he does a good job, I think, in the film. Yeah. However, the woman that plays his wife,
yes,
what's her name? Tika Sumpter. I didn't like her very much.
Okay.
Silence. Dead set. Conversation killer. She was just a little bit vacant for me. I don't know.
Well, of course she was. She'd spent a large amount of off-screen time making two massive cakes. Just... I was like, wait, you made two? Why couldn't you have waited for him to tell you the news and then made one?
Well, that wouldn't be fun, would it? She wants to present it at the time. She's a nice enough person, nice enough character, but I think... I felt like Marsden had committed and she hadn't. You know? There was just, every time she was on screen, every time she's talking to him, there's just this vacant sort of, I know this might not be the best film that's going to come out. I don't know. There was just a hesitancy and I just didn't really connect with her at all. So whenever she did come on screen, I was a bit like, now what?
You know what? You know why there's a vacant expression on her face?
Go on.
Because she was spending all her time thinking about the pleasant atmosphere at America's greatest restaurant, Olive Garden.
What is the obsession with the Olive Garden?
Oh, fuck me, I don't know.
I've no idea.
It's the weirdest, like, I mean, Michael Bay does some pretty bad product placement, like, blatant, but... Every now and then, like, at least when he does blatant product placement, it's just like there'll be the thing that he's advertising very prominently in the shot, but no one addresses it. Fucking this, it was Olive Garden, whatever that housing website was that they were looking at. Yeah, it was like when the Power Rangers reboot came out, and then the whole second half of the film was like, we need to get to Krispy Kreme.
Interesting. I haven't seen the Power Rangers one.
Oh, it's wonderful.
I will take your word for it. yeah, that was just an aside. I just didn't really like her character all that much, but she wasn't really around that much either, so it's not, you know, a big deal.
No.
Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik, what are your thoughts?
um, there were some bits that he was doing that I liked. There were some bits that I really didn't care for. And then there was that one bit where he left a pause just long enough to make a line very funny to me and to not the target audience.
So what did you like? Because I think he really committed to that role.
I'm trying to think now, what did I like? It was the...
Okay, what didn't you like, maybe? That might be easier. What didn't you like?
That bit where he fucking dances.
It's a little strange, but...
I was like, fuck off.
Who doesn't enjoy a little dance to themselves when they're in their lair? Looking for world domination. Who doesn't crank up the stereo and have a little boogie?
There was a bit he did that I really liked, that like really made me laugh. I can't remember what it was. It might have been when like he saw Sonic and he screamed and then got punched in the face. I remember that made me laugh.
Yeah. I think he was generally pretty good as Dr. Robot. Although at first when I saw him, I was like, wait a minute. You look nothing like Dr. Robotnik. Like, you are him in name and nothing else. And at first, that irritated me a little bit.
I don't. Go on.
But I actually came to appreciate the difference. And then, right at the end of the film, I think it's a post-credit cut, or maybe it's right before the end titles, where you see him on the Mushroom Planet.
Yeah.
And he's like shaving his head in this kind of Apocalypse Now kind of look. And he's got the big bushy mustache at that point. And I was like, oh, okay. So if there is a Sonic 2, he may start to look more like Dr. Robotnik as we know him.
Well, that's, as I said, I think through most of the film, he just flat out didn't look like it.
Yeah.
And then at that point, I thought they'd gone too far in the other direction. So I didn't think he looked like him, but I understood what he was going for.
Yeah.
But I wasn't wild about him as Dr. Robotnik, although the one bit, and it tickled me just because of the length of the pause.
Mm-hmm.
Was where in this film that's for children, they're having a conversation about breastfeeding.
Oh yeah, because I was breastfed, and he's like, "Ooh, good for you," or something like that. Or
no, he doesn't say something that. Along those lines, it's the way he goes.
So strange.
He says something like, he's on about how smart he is. So he says, "I was spitting formula while you were still spitting up formula." And James Marsden goes, oh, actually, I was breastfed. And Gene Carey goes, nice.
That's it, yeah. Yeah. And
pause between the rest of the sentence.
Just
long enough.
It was, a strange move for a kid's film, but I suppose they have to keep the parents entertained on some level as well. I came around to him being Dr. Robotnik, but I think that's partially because he just fully committed to that role. He was having fun.
Yeah.
He was delivering the lines like a typical arch villain. Really over the top, stylized, you know, nonsense. And I think because he committed so hard to it, I ended up being on board. I didn't care that he didn't look like Dr. Robotnik by the end, anyway. What else? I mean, most of my notes are really just, that was cute.
That was cute.
Like when Sonic saves the tortoise at the beginning and then decides, hey, I'm going to take you on a little ride. And you see the little smile on the tortoise's face as they're racing at top speeds. That's just adorable. I made a note about the tortoise. I was like, that's so fucking cute. And yeah, overall, I don't really have a lot to say about it, apart from it's not as bad as you might think it is. I actually quite enjoyed it twice. It's just cute and it's funny and yeah, a harmless bit of fun that gave me a slight pang of nostalgia for when I used to play Sonic the Hedgehog and loved it. Listening to Michael Jackson's Dangerous on my little purple stereo as I played. Oh, they were good times. It was the 90s. It was a different time. Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. Although, I have to say, Detective Pikachu is the far superior film.
Yes. Oh, are we going into Detective Pikachu now?
We can do. I mean, do you have anything else to say about Sonic? Have I just cut us off entirely?
Well, I was going to say the only thing left to talk about with Sonic, it's weird because, like, in these things, well, when I listen back to these, I'm like, we discussed, like, about half the plot and then just stopped. But, like,
yeah,
at the same time, it always feels like we've discussed it, whatever we're discussing, enough. So, but with Sonic, they clearly set it up for a sequel.
Yes.
Because they had Tails appear at the end.
Yes.
Who seems to know who Sonic is, despite the fact that Sonic lived in a deserted village with an owl and vanished as a baby. So,
again, there's no more information. They kind of just expect you to go, oh, okay, sure.
And despite the fact that it had a very prominent shot of the back of Tails, I couldn't work out whether he had two or one buttholes, so that is still a mystery that shall plague us forevermore.
I have never in my life considered that.
Have you never heard the how many buttholes does Tails have question?
No. That has passed me by.
It was, I don't know who came up with it, but it was basically they worked out that if he only had one butthole, then the tails would stem from the same place.
Yes.
So for them to move like a propeller, they'd eventually just like twist up and he'd fall. So they worked out that logically for him to be able to spin them like a helicopter blades, he would have to have two separate buttholes. It was something like that. I can't remember how it worked, but it's, yeah.
Again, how much time do these people have on their hands? I mean, I hope they're having fun figuring this stuff out, but
look, furries stem from a variety of places. the
very strange.
The furries that are probably like dangerous stem from the modern Sonic fandom, like.
Yes.
The yeah.
The Sonic erotica.
Oh. You know what, I found some and I was like, well, this will be fun to read out on the next episode, but we didn't get 10 listeners on the last episode, so
ooh,
not gonna do it.
Well, I mean, we do pick some of the strangest stuff to talk about, so I'm really not surprised that we don't have, you know, hundreds of listeners desperate to know what we think about, I don't know, Maps to the Stars, for example.
Yeah.
Hey, it is what it is. We have fun.
We do.
But you're right, it does feel like Sonic was set up for a sequel, but I haven't heard anything about one, have you?
No. I've heard, though, that there's gonna be, at some point, a Super Mario film.
Another one? Ooh.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be animated this time, so
yeah. Oh, so no Bob... Well, Bob Hoskins has sadly left us, hasn't he? So.
Oh yeah, no, of course Bob Hoskins. Has, hasn't he? Yeah. Well,
no, wouldn't be a podcast if we didn't talk about someone who's dead. Yeah, interesting.
But the reason I bring that up is because the place that Sonic is thinking of going to but doesn't particularly want to go there is a planet full of mushrooms.
Yeah.
And the Mushroom Kingdom is Mario's place.
Of course. So they could do a crossover.
Yeah, I would be surprised if they didn't do a Mario versus Sonic Dawn of Donkey Kong or something.
I wonder if they would try and release a Mario Brothers film first to see how that went down and then do a crossover, or just bank on the fact that Sonic, I think it did pretty well at the box office.
I think it'd be smarter for them to do what they've done with like Godzilla and King Kong, like have Sonic then do Mario then do the crossover,
right,
sort of thing.
Holy God,
what?
I've just googled the Sonic box office.
Oh yeah,
it says Sonic the Hedgehog grossed 146 million in the United States and Canada, and a worldwide total of 306 million.
That is disgusting.
That's crazy, isn't it? I wonder what their budget was. Let's look it up.
Well, they probably got a massive kickback from Olive Garden.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. 85 million it cost.
Oh, yeah, didn't they say? Because there was like a conspiracy theory that they'd released the trailer with the gross Sonic as like a publicity stunt thing, like on purpose.
Oh, and they already had him looking cute.
Yeah.
In the film. Oh, interesting.
But people worked out that if they had done that, they were like, they wouldn't have done this because
the other way.
Well, it would not even that, but the amount of money that it would have cost to do what they'd done.
I see, yeah.
Even if they'd only done, like, even if the bad Sonic only existed for that 2-minute trailer, that in and of itself would have cost, like, millions anyway.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting, though. Interesting. It would be a risky move to put it out as a fake, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Because it could have totally backfired and everybody could have just gone, oh, it looks terrible, don't care, move on.
Yeah.
Instead of that giant backlash which helped raise the awareness of it.
Yeah. That being said, I do really, really want to see, because it exists, I do want to see the original cut.
it would be interesting.
This is my version of release the Snyder cut.
release the
fucked up Sonic cut.
Yeah, the horrifying fever dream.
I want to see what the original Tails looked like.
Mm.
I want to see that diseased mutant fox fucking thing.
like one of those terrible London foxes. I don't know what you're sort of Birmingham-ish, are you?
Yes.
I've forgotten now. Yeah. I don't know what your city foxes are like, but whenever I go into London, if you see a city fox, they are rail thin, they look suspicious and janky as all hell, and they're like molting, and they look in a bad way. Whereas where I live in Hertfordshire, the foxes around here, glossy coats. They are friendly. They like to come fairly close to you. They look beautiful. And I think it's because they're getting the leftovers from Waitrose, but...
But while he gets close and you're stroking it, there's another fox behind you stealing your wallet, so...
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, it's just funny. I just thought, yeah, it's one of those city foxes, those awful-looking, mangy... Yeah. Suspicious foxes. Poor Tails.
I'd be interested to see what they, because I think they should do like don't have Robotnik come back in the next film straight away.
Right.
Do what they did, like, you know, with the original Superman film.
Mm-hmm.
The original, it opens with General Zod. He gets sent to the Phantom Zone.
Yeah.
And that film's villain's Lex Luthor. And then in the sequel, General Zod's in it.
Yeah.
Do that. Have Thingamabobby, Robotnik, not in the sequel. And have the villain be Knuckles.
Ooh.
Because then they could have the whole conflict because of like killing of the owl, and then when they have the big confrontation, they will get to that moment where Knuckles is like, oh wait, my mom was an owl too, and then they can become friends.
Oh no, wait, your owl was called Martha. My owl was called Martha. Did we just become best friends? Oh, Martha. Yeah, no, that would be quite cool, actually, if they brought Tails in for a sequel. And Knuckles, and, you know, fleshed out a bit more of Sonic's world.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of cool.
Sonic 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Electric Boogaloo. It's never a good sequel title, that. It works for everything. Everything. Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Electric Boogaloo. It just works. It just works. Fight Club 2. Electric Boogaloo. It just works. So is there anything else that you wanted to talk about with Sonic?
Not really. I think, like, all the bits that, like, stuck out to me, I think we've mentioned. And we've discussed prospects for a sequel. We've pitched a sequel.
Yes, we've pitched a sequel. Get it right.
what was I going to call it? No, not Electric Boogaloo. It wasn't. It was for the Sonic and Mario film. Sonic versus Mario, Dawn of Donkey Kong.
Dawn of Donkey Kong, yeah. We can only hope. We'll pitch that as well. Don't worry.
Can you imagine that, though? The just that scene from Batman versus Superman, but done with Mario and Sonic. And with Mario just saying to Sonic, is she with you? And then cutting to Donkey Kong dressed as Wonder Woman.
Oh, God. Oh. Oh, sad thing is I can imagine it happening, you know?
There's probably fan art out of it out there.
Yes, there's bound to be. Okay, so let's
do you want to do the obligatory and most pointless part of the podcast?
Oh, yes, the most, yes, the star rating. Oh, difficult, lemon difficult. I would say I want to give it a 3 out of 5, which doesn't necessarily make it sound good, but it is good. It's just not 4 out of 5 stars or 5 out of 5 stars. So I 3 out of 5.
Cool.
What about you?
I'm gonna give it 3 out of 5 as well.
Oh, okay.
I'd already decided on it.
Oh, I bet you did.
All right, then, sure 5 out of 5, fuck you. No, but yeah, 3 out of 5.
3 out of 5, yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah. So, moving on to Pokemon Detective Pikachu.
Yeah.
Now, when did I had a look into this, I swear I made a note. Okay, Pokemon came to the UK in 1999. I was 18, so Pokemon was not my bag. However, my little brother loved Pokemon. So I was aware of it, but not in any... I never watched it. It just passed me by, even though I was aware of it as a phenomenon. But I'm assuming you were probably around the right age to just love the shit out of Pokemon, right?
I was the right age, but I never watched it.
Oh, really?
No, I think I watched a couple of episodes of, like, the TV show, and it was, like, fine, but I was never, like, invested in it, and I never played. Well, I never had a, like, games console at all till the Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty recent, and the first handheld console that I've ever had is the Nintendo Switch.
Right, okay.
Or the Nintendo Switch Lite, because it's cheaper and I'm smart. So
yeah.
So the first Pokemon game I've ever played is Pokemon Shield.
Right.
I've never played any of the others, which has served me well insofar as everyone else who bought either Pokemon Sword or Shield were disappointed in it, and were annoyed that some of them had bought a whole new console just to play a game that disappointed them.
Yeah.
Whereas me, it was my first ever Pokemon game, and I really enjoyed it. I've got to the final boss of the base game like today.
Oh, okay.
I've never been, like, invested in it.
Okay.
And the film that everyone loved when they're a kid, but when they grow up realize is actually not that great because the plot is just nonsensical.
Yeah.
They did, like, they digitally updated it, and it's on Netflix, and it's got this new, like, 3D animation that looks really good.
Oh, okay.
And I've watched like half of that, and I was like, "Yeah, this animation's good."
Yeah.
We'll switch that off. You know. But yeah. So no, it's never been like of major interest to me.
I had just assumed, just because you're a bit younger than me, I'm being kind to myself there. I had just assumed that you had probably grown up just that would have been part of your childhood and whatnot, and that you were gonna school me on the Pokemon world.
No.
Okay.
I can tell you the most evil thing that Pokemon has done.
Go on.
And I say evil, it's not really, but like Pokemon has in more recent years been like, you know, every now and then where, like, capitalism, like, really takes the piss?
Yes.
Well, Pokemon, when they used to do it, as far as I'm aware, they'd bring out a game and be like, Pokemon Red. And you'd be like, cool, thanks. And then the following year or the following next 2 years, whatever, you'd be like, okay, here's Pokemon Blue. Completely different game, completely new set of Pokemons, here you go. Mm-hmm. Recently, they've started doing these things where they're, like, in pairs. So one year you had Pokemon X and Y come out.
Uh-huh.
And I think last year it was... Actually, no, last... The year before was Pokemon Sun and Moon. And the most recent set is Pokemon Sword and Shield.
Okay.
And what it is the exact same game, identical, except in one version of the game, there'll be about four Pokemon, which you can't get in... So, like, Pokemon Sword and Shield, for example. Uh-huh. There's... in Sword, there's, like, this weird, like, bird thing that you can't get in Pokemon Shield.
Right.
And there's a weird version of a unicorn, which you can get in Pokemon Shield, that you can't get in Pokemon Sword.
Right. But it's the same game.
It's the exact same game. The only difference is that the real difference in terms of gameplay, as far as I'm aware, is if you buy sword, at the end of the game, you summon the sword Pokemon. And if you buy shield, at the end, you summon the shield Pokemon. But they're both identical.
That is taking the piss.
Yeah. Oh, no, actually, in the new one, there's trainers as well, the gym leaders. There's some...
Right.
There's some exclusive, and to be quite honest, the ones in Pokemon Sword are so dull. Like, it was like rock and fighting with the two. Whereas in Pokemon Shield, you got ice and this weird ghost child who I think's dead. It's very creepy, but you know.
Cool.
But yeah. So there's like some minor differences, but ultimately exactly the same.
But, okay.
But yeah, and I was just like, God's sake, man. Like,
yeah, that's really shitty. That's like when, well, back in the day when CDs were a thing, you know, a band would release their album and you'd buy it, and then 6 months later they'd re-release it, but with live tracks or demos or B-sides or something with it. And it's always like, but I've already bought the album. Why couldn't you have just put it all on there to begin with? That's bullshit.
Yeah.
Because obviously you want those other tracks. You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's taking the piss.
Yeah, it was not a thing they like used to do either, which is why it's like, I was just like, why did you start doing this now? Well, like, I don't, but
yeah.
Yeah.
So okay. What did you think of Detective Pikachu?
It was weird, because when you like look at the drawings and stuff of Pokemon, like, they're just like your like basic 2D drawings.
Yeah.
I never thought of Pokemon as being furry, but as soon as I saw them, I was like, you know, that makes sense. Of course they would be, but I just never considered it. And Psyduck is the cutest thing.
No, Bulbasaurus is the cutest thing.
Bulbasaur.
Ever. Bulbasaur, that's it, not Bulbasaurus. See, I don't even know their names.
Bulbasaur is very cute, yeah.
I've seen that one before. I've been drawn to it before on, like, Pinterest. For whatever reason, a Pokemon will pop up, and I go,
yeah.
Oh, I really like that one. And you can get, like, little planters for succulents that look like that character, and then the succulent that grows is the bulb on his back, and I just think it's the cutest thing ever. Ever! Oh! I wasn't prepared for the cuteness, I'll be honest.
They are.
And I was concerned. Because, I mean, like I said, I'm old, and so everything makes me cry now. All animation makes me cry. And I saw that they were stupid cute, and I thought, oh no. Oh, this is going to make me cry. They're going to put one of these cuties in peril, and I'm just going to feel it too much. But it was okay. I didn't cry. But they are so damn cute. All of them.
When they appeared, like the Bulbasaurs, like the like roughly halfway through, where there's just like a little herd of them.
Oh,
that they are cute.
They're the cutest things. They're just so gentle and sweet.
But I love Psyduck. I was just.
He is funny.
I was like proper like tensed up where they like break into the base.
Yeah,
and he's so nervous, like when he drops down from the ceiling and she kind of catches him, and when he lands, he's just like really freaked out by everything. I was like, oh, so cute.
Yeah.
And when he makes Pikachu give him a foot rub.
Yes. Adorable. They're all adorable. Like, even at one point, because Pikachu is cute, but I'm not as like attached as I was to the Bulbasaur, and because you're hearing Ryan Reynolds' voice, the cuteness factor is diminished a bit. And so I was watching the film, all is fine, and then you saw a moment where Pikachu is talking to him, but from someone else's perspective, and they obviously can't hear Ryan Reynolds,
and they just
hear the pika, pika.
Yeah.
And oh my god, I was suddenly like, oh, it's so cute. Oh my god.
Yeah, because
I was not prepared.
Yeah, because when you're hearing Ryan Reynolds' voice, it is him just like doing Deadpool.
See, to me, he's just being Ryan Reynolds. I don't hear the Deadpool side of things. But well, then I don't know how much Ryan Reynolds stuff you've watched, so...
I have watched Green Lantern.
Okay.
Deadpool 2, and Six Underground. I think that's it.
Okay.
And Detective Pikachu, obviously.
See, I wouldn't say I've grown up with Ryan Reynolds, but I've been watching him in movies since, like, I don't know, the late 90s, early 2000s, maybe. And that's just his shtick. And that's why it worked so well. It was such perfect casting to have him as Deadpool, because he is that sarcastic, you know, Ryan Reynolds. That's just his thing. So when I was watching it... Oh, go on.
X-Men Origins Wolverine. I've seen him in that as well, because he plays Deadpool in that.
Oh, yes, of course he is. Yeah, but he doesn't talk.
No.
Which I know caused a lot of hoo-ha at the time.
Yeah, because I was a fan of Deadpool comics by that time. I'd gotten into them.
Right.
And I knew Deadpool was going to be in it. And I was like, yes. And at the beginning, where he's like, he cuts the bullet in half and he's just sass-mouthing everyone. I was like, oh, he's so Deadpool. Can't wait for him to get the costume. And they did what they did to him at the end.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for the fact that it was my mom, I would have punched the person sitting next to me in the cinema. I was so angry.
A lot of people were pretty pissed off. I remember that.
Oh, it's chronic.
But I was aware of it. When I was watching it, I was thinking, because you had said before about how it annoys you that he's doing his Deadpool thing. And I was like, no, I think he's just being his Ryan Reynolds self, that sarcastic kind of, I don't want to say douchebag, because that's a bit too far, but there's plenty of his earlier stuff that has that same characterization and that same tone to his comedy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've never watched it all the way through, but I watched like the first half an hour of like Van Wilder.
Oh, God.
And I was like, oh, shit, he's being Deadpool again.
I'm not the biggest fan of Van Wilder. I did watch it at the time. But it is, it's that kind, that's him. That's his shtick, that's his go-to comedy chops, are to be somewhat sarcastic and somewhat, you know, roll his eyes and very reactive to what the other person is saying, basically.
Yeah.
But then I'm biased because I love Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
I mean, hello. Good looking and funny. You can't beat it. But anyway, back to the film. I really enjoyed it, and again was surprised at how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
Did you enjoy it? Did you really like it?
I enjoyed it. I haven't played the Detective Pikachu game.
Because
it's on a console that I don't have. But in the game, his the voice is like a gruff, I'm a detective voice.
Yeah.
Which is not what Ryan Reynolds is doing at all.
No.
And I very much wanted, I think I still stand by this, that Danny DeVito should have done the voice. Doing as Frank Reynolds from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
But no, I liked, I mean, for me it was weird because I was just, because I like his voice, I just associate with Deadpool.
Yeah.
It kind of like permanently had me on edge because I was like, oh, when's he going to make a bald, like, he's, look at my balls joke sort of thing. I was like,
yeah.
But, no, he was still good. And, like, the humor was just right. Like, he was, like, sarcastic enough, but like not too sarcastic, and
yeah,
like yeah,
it was a good balance. I remember when the film was announced and people said it was going to be Ryan Reynolds doing the voice, and I was like, what? I couldn't quite imagine it, because he does have that, you know, somewhat edge to his delivery and stuff. And I think he did really well. I think he's one of those people that can really do voice acting well, where you can get that vulnerability, but also the comedy, you know, confidence and whatever.
Yeah.
Without it being too much, because a lot of times when I don't know if you watch Friends or if you're a fan of Friends or not, but yes. I quite enjoy it. Problematic, yes, but I still enjoy it.
Yeah.
And the character of Chandler, I really like him.
Chandler.
See, right? So he's funny, he's sarcastic, he's that Ryan Reynolds kind of comedy. And then when Chandler tries to be sincere, I can't bear it. I cannot stand it when he's trying to be sincere and trying to be romantic or just, yeah, sincere. It makes me cringe so much.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why. I still love the character. I still think he's great. But those moments, particularly when he gets together with Monica and they have these moments of he's being a nice guy and being all romantic or understanding or whatever, it just, I don't like it. It's too much. He's too overly sincere to the point where it makes me cringe. Anyway, that was a tangent. But Ryan Reynolds, I think he didn't, maybe it's because I couldn't see him, I don't know, but I felt like he did the vulnerable side of the character really well. It didn't make me cringe.
Yeah, when he's like walking along all forlorn singing the Pokemon theme song.
Aww.
And he's like, so sad, but like a nice little reference.
Yes. Oh, I picked up a couple of different little nods to things and little references. And I mean, like you said, it is neo-noir for kids.
Yeah. I dish.
The way it's shot, the characters, the plot line, like, it is neo-noir for kids. And that's so unexpected.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's so enjoyable. Like, I
really is. And like with the character, I don't know her name. The younger girl who is, what is she? Is she a journalist?
Oh yeah, her.
She's a journalist. And when we first meet her, she's presented like a femme fatale. She's in like the shadows. You can just see like sort of the outline of her, because there's bright light, so she's in kind of the shadows as she emerges. And she was the typical fast talking high trousered 40s woman.
See,
30s
now,
I should say.
Did you think, because now that you've said that,
mm-hmm.
and given that I was saying, oh yeah, it's neo-noir, and like chucking that term around a lot,
yeah,
I didn't pick up on that, the femme fatale thing. Right. I just thought, especially when I saw it in the cinema, that for whatever reason they must have shot the film really quick, because the acting for the first, up until Detective Pikachu first appears,
mm-hmm.
I thought the acting from pretty much everyone was shockingly bad.
Oh, okay.
I was like, Apart from Thingy's friend, the one who plays Dupinder in Deadpool, apart from him, he was fine because he was only in it a bit. But
was
I was just like,
that was at the very beginning.
Yeah,
yeah. So
I was just like, okay, this guy can't act. Well, no, I knew he could act because he'd played like that screechy intern in Jurassic World 2. But I was just like, right, so he can't act. And then Ken Watanabe came on screen. I was like, ah.
Yeah.
Ken Watanabe. And I was like, shit, he can't act either. And then that, and then the girl came on screen. I was like, fuck, she really can't act. And then Psyduck came on screen. I was like, okay, he can fucking act. but I was just like, what is with all the human characters being awful? And then they have the first encounter with, like, Pikachu and the Apoms that chase them through the house and stuff. And then it, like, for me, settled down. Like, they all, like, spoke to each other like normal people would.
Yes.
And it was... And then the only time where the acting was absolutely abysmal was when they went to the lab and there was 10 minutes of Rita Ora, like, just expositing at the camera. I was like...
the journalist? No, she's not.
No, she's the scientist who, like, explains the plot.
Oh! Right, okay, yes. I was getting her confused with the girl that plays the journalist.
Oh, right, yeah.
I only really know Rita Ora as a name, not as a face, if that makes sense.
I know her, like, as a concept.
Yeah, she's one of those names that pops up on Twitter and Facebook, and I hear now and again from the kids. There's this new person called Rita Ora. She's a thing. And I've never really investigated. So I literally know her as a concept and not as a person.
Right, so Rita Ora is this carbon-based life form.
She's a human.
She was in the... Oh, God, this is a tangent I don't want to go down. And I know you're going to pick me up on some of it, so I'm going to say this as quickly as possible.
Go.
I quite like the 50 Shades of Grey, the first film.
Keep going.
Rita Ora is in that one the least. She's in the sequels in increasing amounts. And her, the length of time she is in them, the quality of the film goes down.
I see.
I'm not saying the two are related, but they are just interesting patterns.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to skip past all of that.
No, I will. I will say now, the second two are awful. I will stand, but I think I legitimately enjoy the first 50 Shades of Grey film, and I will die on that hill.
That's the hill you will die on.
It is.
Okay, I mean, my hill is Hudson Hawk is a great film. So I think, yeah.
I haven't seen it, but it sounds like a good film. I don't know.
I was obsessed with Hudson Hawk as a kid. I thought it was fucking fantastic. I still do. I can see why people take the piss, because it's ridiculous. But at the same time, as a kid, I was like, this is everything. It's comedy. It's action. It's romance. It's this. It's that. I loved it. I appreciate I'm very alone.
I think you are drawing a false equivalence here, because that is like a childhood film that you still love as much as you did then. Now, yeah. 50 Shades of Grey is a film that I intermittently horny 25-year-old watched and thought was not terrible.
I've never watched any of them. I've never read the books of 50 Shades of Grey.
The best thing about them is Jamie Dornan has just, like, cracking abs, and it made the world aware of Dakota Johnson, who's gone on to do a lot of good shit, so, yeah.
Yeah, I did really enjoy her in the Suspiria remake, which again surprised me.
I haven't seen that. I've been meaning to, but
Have you seen the original?
No.
Oh, okay.
I think the original is shorter.
Yeah, the original is so good. Like, so unique and of its time and glorious for 100 different reasons. And when I heard about the remake, I was annoyed a bit about it, but then got over it very quickly. And thought, I'm not going to be interested in that. And then I saw the trailer and went, oh my God, sign me up. And then when I watched it, I was just blown away. I think it's fantastic, which is rare for a remake.
If only you could apply that attitude to the Nick Wicker Cage masterpiece.
Fuck you. Ugh, no. Back to Pikachu.
Yes.
Now that we've gone down that Rita Ora rabbit hole.
Yeah. This is still related to Detective Pikachu, but if I don't say it now, I'm scared that I'll forget.
Okay.
You know, every now and then when there's like a clickbait article and it's just like, oh, XYZ wants to do blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Detective Pikachu came out and everyone was like, oh, yeah, it's like a genre piece, but for kids and stuff.
Yeah.
The clickbaity article that came out was that the people who made Detective Pikachu wanted to do, and I quote, another Pokemon film, which was essentially A Star Is Born, but with Jigglypuff. And
let me Google Jigglypuff so that I have it in my mind, because I don't know what the hell that looks like.
It was a cute little pink thing that was singing in the cafe.
That was such a cute moment! Again, noir. You've got the instead of it being a bar, it's like a coffee shop. And instead of the sultry woman singing her torch song in the corner, it was Jigglypuff.
It was a sexy Jigglypuff.
Oh, it was so good. There were so many little moments like that where I was just like, yes, yes, this is neo-noir for kids and I'm here for it.
Yeah, but
it was brilliant.
Pretty much all of the comments were people going, you do know what happens in A Star Is Born, right?
Yeah, true. How are they going to adapt that for kids? That's an interesting idea, though. I'm not mad about it.
No, I'm definitely...
I would probably watch that. Because I love A Star Is Born. Not so much the newest one, but the original three. A Star Is Born.
I've only seen the new one.
See now, because I'm old, I've grown up with all three that came before this one, and I love each of them for different reasons. But I didn't hate the newest one. Didn't really do a whole lot for me, but I didn't hate it either.
I liked it, but I could tell that there's something not quite right with the film, insofar as the bits with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga and their like love story together,
yeah,
left me completely unmoved.
Yes.
And I'm going to say now, spoiler alert for A Star Is Born, the bit where Bradley Cooper kills himself,
mm-hmm.
which is built up as this like really powerful moment,
yeah,
left me, I didn't cry at all.
Yeah.
Yet in the film, I did cry when him and Sam Elliott have a conversation. And I was like,
oh, yeah.
I love Sam Elliott and think, I think he should just be in a cowboy in every film. Just every film is a cowboy.
Yeah.
So, and I was like, and like that really stood out to me, that I was like, Sam Elliott was like the only like emotional part of the film I connected to. So,
yeah.
But yeah.
It's funny. I don't think that, you know, I think Lady Gaga's actually pretty good at acting. I don't know quite what it was, but I didn't quite buy into their romance as much as, you know, the other people did.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, you watched Detective Pikachu and you were shocked at the abysmal acting.
Yes.
Now that... Were you... You already called it a neo-noir, so did you realise at some point what was happening during the film? Or was it after that you went, oh, that's what's happening?
No, watching it the second time round, which was literally 2 days ago, I still thought the acting at the beginning was abysmal.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't
stand it.
Interesting. I, particularly when the reporter woman turned up, and like I said, they shot her like a femme fatale on the stairs in the shadows. You couldn't quite make her out. And normally that would signal, yeah, she's the femme fatale, you don't trust her. But actually it turned out that you could trust her and she was an ally, which is cool. But it made me go, oh, that's such a nice little nod to 30s noir. And then she came down the stairs and started talking, and she was literally the, hey, I gotta get a scoop, you know?
Yeah.
Like, proper old school, fast talking, no nonsense lady. And I loved that. Loved that. And like you said, with Jigglypuff singing in the bar, these nice little nods to your stereotypical noir film from the 30s and 40s that was all very shadowy and smoky, and he was addicted to caffeine.
Yeah.
Pikachu, instead of your typical detective back then who was addicted to booze and was always in the bar and three sheets to the wind.
Yeah.
All the time. So I really liked those little touches. I also really liked I don't know if this is what it was like in the video game, but that kind of Blade Runner look to the city.
Oh, yeah, it did have a...
Which again ties in because Blade Runner is neo-noir. Yeah. And so this weird mix of London, Tokyo, or, you know, somewhere similar, it just had real Blade Runner vibes.
Yeah. The only thing I know about the game is that the voice is, like, gruff.
Yeah, quite different.
And Pikachu's, like, fully committed to the Sherlock Holmes look.
Yeah.
Like, he has the little cape thing as well.
Yeah.
But, that's yeah. But, yeah, I don't think the city is as grim as it is in Detective Pikachu, because even though it's a kid's film... There is a surprising amount of darkness, like the illegal Pokemon fighting rings.
Oh, that, actually, I made a few notes about that because I didn't really grow up with Pokemon, it never truly occurred to me until I was watching the film. And literally, right before the illegal thing happened, I was thinking, actually, it's not a great message to be sending to kids about animals.
Oh, bless you.
Making them fight.
Thought that everyone has about Pokemon when they get to the age of, like, proper consciousness.
Oh, okay. See, because it was never a thing, I just had never really considered it. But then I was suddenly like, oh my God, it is kind of teaching kids that it's okay to make animals fight each other, and it's not okay. And I suddenly felt like, oh man, where's this gonna go? And then the illegal thing happened and I was like, oh no, don't make me watch anything like this, I don't like it. They're too cute, don't do this to me. And so I liked, actually, that it seems they've the Pokemon people, Nintendo, whoever it is that owns them, they've made a conscious effort to try and move away from that, of the catching animals and making them fight.
Yeah.
Because it's illegal in the city, and people seem to be interacting more with... Like, Pokemon's just walking around. There's no balls. There's no cages.
I like how, thingy as well, the Squirtles are, like, firefighters.
Oh, they're part of the fire brigade. Yeah. Right? That's so sweet. So I really liked that, actually, that they had made a conscious decision to, move away from that idea. But it is dark making kids watch that shit.
Would you want to hear a bit of Pokemon lore that comes from the cartoons?
Mm-hmm.
And will make the scene in the fighting ring even more, like, slightly fucked.
Yeah.
You know the big dragon?
Yes.
You know how its tail's on fire?
Yes.
Well, through all three stages of evolution, you have Charmander, Charmeleon, and Charizard. Their tails are all on fire. And their tails will always be on fire, because when the fire goes out, that means they're dead.
Right.
They get a water Pokemon to flood the place.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
They could have murdered the Charizard.
They could have. Well,
Oh, speaking of fucked up, sorry. going from one place to another. They set Mr. Mime on fire.
I know! When he started shaking out the gasoline can, I was like, no.
I loved that.
That is dark.
It was dark, but it was so funny.
Yes, it was. What's that say about us?
It's like where he was trying to blow out the match.
Yeah.
The kid just drops his arm.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Brilliant. And again, that was another little nod to the whole, you know, the detective who's got the suspect in the chair and the bright light in his eyes. And,
yeah,
you know, oh, love it. Also, talking about the illegal fighting ring, the whole drugging, you know, with that purple stuff that makes them more aggressive.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, horrible. Horrible. Oh, I'm so delicate when it comes to animals and cute shit. Well, anything in peril, really, but mostly animals. Yeah, I don't like it. Because I'm pathetic. okay, I made a note about this. When... I say the kid, he's actually Justice Smith, the guy that plays the son. When I first saw him, I had assumed he was a high schooler because he looks so young. And there was just something about, I guess, maybe the trying to catch Pokemon or something. I don't know, but I assumed he was a high schooler. And then he said, right, I've got to go to work. And I was like, what?
Yeah, it's
work.
It's weird because it's like, an inverse of Riverdale.
Yeah, it's normally the other way around. It's someone who's way too old.
Yeah, like literally Riverdale, there's just like a scene where you've got Archie stripped to the waist, buff as anything, arguing with Molly Ringwald, who plays his mom, going, Mom, I want to drop out of school and become a bare knuckle boxer full time. And his mom, Molly Ringwald, goes, Archie, you cannot do that. You are 16. And I was like, oh, yeah, they're supposed to be 16. Yeah. And he's like looks about 29.
It's the same with 13 Reasons Why. There's a kid at that high school. I constantly make the joke of like, yeah, you got to leave school and go pay your mortgage and look after your four kids with your wife because you look like 40. It's ridiculous. But yeah, the inverse of that. I genuinely thought the character was a high schooler until he said, right, I've got to go to work. And I was like, wait, work? What? What? Like, yeah. And then he was off at his proper career. And I was like, this is so weird. I thought you were so much younger.
Yeah.
But when he goes to his dad's apartment, and yeah. I can't remember if the TV's already on or if he switches it off. No, he can't do because he switches it off. So the TV's already on, and the clip on the TV is from Home Alone. And it's the fake movie within the movie, Angels with Dirty Faces. Is this any bells for you? Are you not a Home Alone fan?
I've watched the first one. I don't remember much of it.
Really? Oh, okay. Well, okay, in Home Alone... there's a bit with Macaulay Culkin where he's watching movies that he shouldn't really be watching, but because he's on his own, he's, you know, watching it. And it's this old black and white gangster movie that's fake. It's not a real film. They recorded it for the film. And that's what's playing on the TV when he comes in. And yeah, he says, I think he even says it out loud, like, oh, you're still watching old movies, and switches the TV off. And it just made me laugh. I liked it.
Cool.
But there you go. That's a joke for us olds who watch Home Alone religiously at Christmas because you must. And the second one, Lost in New York. The others, I'm not interested in. But the first two Home Alones are solid entertainment as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, so I like that. What else did I really like? Oh, it's got Jimmy from You're the Worst in it.
Chris Gere.
I love You're the Worst. So when I saw that it was Shitty Jimmy, I was like, oh, that's brilliant. And Bill Nye, of course.
Yes, I love him. I was so glad he was in it.
Yeah, he's fantastic. And Ken Watanabe, I wasn't expecting that, and that was a nice little surprise.
Yes.
So I think it's fantastic. I really liked all of the cast, even the main guy, who I wasn't fully sold on at first. I think it was all just really good. Surprisingly good. And that sounds condescending, and I suppose it is in a way, but I just wasn't expecting this high quality neo-noir for kids with a great cast and a pretty interesting story. I wanted to know what was going on, even though, as far as I'm concerned, it was a little bit predictable. Do you not agree? You went suspiciously quiet. Did you not realize that Pikachu was going to be the dad?
Oh, no, I knew that. That's...
Right, okay. I thought that was pretty predictable from the get-go.
Yeah, no. I wasn't expecting Bill Nye to turn out to be the bad guy. I forgot Mewtwo was in it halfway through, so that was... but yeah, I was expecting Pikachu to be the dad, which... Yeah. Has now made, and I'm going to get it, they're going to do a sequel to the game Detective Pikachu, because the first one sold so well. They're going to do it, and it's going to be on the Switch. And I'm going to get it because when the game came out, it ended. The ending of the game, as far as I'm aware, is that Pikachu, Detective Pikachu is still Detective Pikachu, and he and the kid leave to continue searching for the dad.
And
the implication there is Pikachu's the dad, he just doesn't realise it yet. But because the film came out and did that twist, in the sequel, they're going to explain where the dad is and why Detective Pikachu can speak. And it's not going to be that, it's actually the dad.
Right.
Because that twist's already been done. So I am so intrigued to see what the hell they come up with.
Interesting. Yeah. I always forget that it's based on a game, and I don't know what the gameplay like actually looks like. So
it's loosely based on I think they I read it on Wikipedia, so it's not in depth research, but it's the plot is changed quite heavily.
Right. Wow. Yeah, I really liked it, and I do think it's better than the Sonic the Hedgehog film, but possibly because I'm already a fan of noir and, you know, old films and stuff, so it kind of scratched that itch for me. There were some nice little nods to the genre that I just really enjoyed.
Yeah. I preferred it because there was more of like a world. Sonic's just, he pops into our world. Detective Pikachu, there's a world that you like go into. So
I think I probably enjoyed it more for that reason as well. It is definitely more of a world to immerse yourself in rather than, you know, Earth, which we're already quite familiar with.
And
I really liked the look of it. I loved that kind of Blade Runner mix-up of cultures that creates something that looks like London but also looks like Tokyo.
Yeah, that was cool. I do like that, yeah.
So what would you... With the star rating?
Oh, we've come to the star rating.
I have. So, sorry, I've jumped ahead there. Did you have anything else that you wanted to add?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
I was going to bring it up, but like if you had nothing else to say, I was going to bring it up, but you beat me to the punch. So, yeah.
So, what is your star rating?
I will give it a 4.
I will also give it a 4.
Copycat.
Yeah, I know. Such a sheep. No, I think it genuinely deserves a good 4 out of 5. It's really good. It's funny. It's action-packed. It's
got Psyduck in it.
It's got Psyduck in it. It's got Bulbasaur in it. The acting is good. And yeah, I just really enjoyed it. So, if anyone's listening, I would definitely recommend checking it out.
Yeah. It's definitely worth watching. If you have to pick between one of them, watch Detective Pikachu.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with Sonic the Hedgehog. It's perfectly enjoyable. But Pikachu is the far superior film in my mind. Now, because we are being super professional and prepared, we actually know what we're doing for the next episode.
Will you say that?
Uh-oh.
And I know technically what we're doing.
Mm.
Now, go on now. You say what you're going to say, because I want some clarification on this, because I don't know whether I've created extra work for myself, so go on.
Okay. I was going to say that the next episode is about Hereditary, the Ari Aster horror from, I did know. I want to say 2018?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, it sounds about right. Mm-hmm. Now, what's your conundrum? What's going on here? What are you talking about?
It turns out I'd created extra work for myself because I was going to watch Hereditary and Midsommar.
Oh, well, now, this is good that you're bringing this up. How professional are we? Were we going to do both or just Hereditary? I am down to do both.
Well,
Or we could split them into 2 episodes, one about Hereditary, one about Midsommar. But I feel like if we're going to talk about Hereditary, we're going to talk about Midsommar.
Yeah, because this is a spoiler for next week and is going to annoy any horror fans who listen to us. I dislike Hereditary very much.
Really? I mean, I know that you prefer Midsommar, but you actively dislike Hereditary.
Oh, I hate it. I actively hate it. Literally, I'll say this, the only reason I saw Midsommar, because it said from Ari Aster, the director of Hereditary, literally I saw that and was like, right, I can switch off for this trailer because I wasn't going to see it. And then Florence Pugh came on screen, who is just an angel and is amazing in everything she's in. And I was like, fuck you, if you're going to criticise Florence Pugh, I will.
That's
fuck
just
you.
Me dying out of, I don't know.
And I was,
Come on.
And I saw she was in it and I was like, okay, I will go and see that. And it's only because of her that I saw Midsommar.
Hormones, man. What a world. They're a hell of a drug.
No
offense to Florence Pugh. None at all. I think she's wonderful. I think she's a great actress and I think, yes, she's very pretty. But I'm fascinated to hear why you actively loathe Hereditary.
I need to defend myself on this. Florence Pugh, she is very pretty, I will acknowledge that, but literally, I think she's like exceptionally good actress. Like, looks aside, I genuinely think she's brilliant.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think she's a fantastic actress. Yes, I think we should probably stop there. Otherwise, we're going to carry on and talk about it.
So
tune in next week when the podcast is over, because I can't. I just will not. The dude does not abide. Like, no.
Tune in next week for why I hate.
Yes. it's going to be good. So tune in, folks.
Yeah. And just in case any of you were wondering, I rate Wet Ass Pussy 5 out of 5.
I'm gonna give it a 4 out of 5. Because, I mean, come on, it's a banger. You can't not want to have a, you know, a groove when you hear it. It's great. The video was fine. I mean, I don't have kids, so I don't have to worry about this bullshit of it's too explicit and whatever. I'm an adult. I can make that choice for myself. Thank you. I suppose if you have kids, you maybe wouldn't want them to watch the video, but it's really not that bad at the end of the day.
I think in terms of content, like, weirdly enough, the video is far less, like, explicit than the lyrics are, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, massively. And I don't understand why she's getting... Well, I do understand, because patriarchy. I do understand why she's getting so much shit for it. And it's a shame, because men in the hip-hop world can be as misogynistic, can be as explicit, can talk about drugs, sex, you know, illegal activity. They can talk about anything they want in their tracks and nobody gives a shit. It's just, oh, that's hip hop. It's cool. No worries. But when a woman, you know, tries to rap about her own sexuality, suddenly it's too explicit and suddenly it's corrupting the youth.
Yeah.
And I feel like, nah, fuck off. Let her sing her song. It's really not that bad. I suppose Oh, no, go on.
I was just going to say, if anyone out there is, like, wondering and thinking to themselves, what should I think about this video? I am conflicted.
Mm.
Find out what Ben Shapiro thinks and then think the opposite of that. And you'll be fine.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's fine. I enjoy it. I don't have a problem with it. But then, you know, I don't fully understand, again, patriarchy, because, you know, I grew up with groups like Salt and Pepper singing about sex and, you know, contraception and, you know, abortion and all kinds of shit. And it's really not that big a deal. People talk about Cardi B as if she's the first ever rapper to, you know, talk about these things. And it's like, I'm sorry, did everybody forget about Lil' Kim? Has everyone forgotten about Missy Elliott? Has everyone forgotten about MC Light and Salt and Pepper? Like, they were all singing about that stuff or rapping about that stuff. And yeah, she's definitely not the first. And fair play to her. Why not? So that's my two cents.
Yeah.
I'm sure everyone at home is, you know,
they can
sleep better tonight knowing that I'm okay with it. Mm. I've given it my feminist stamp of approval.
This message is approved by Cardi B for president.
Oh, that's so wild. I need to look into that. I had no idea that she had spoken out properly about politics and stuff. I'm going to look into that.
She'd be good for the economy as well, because she knows how to make money move.
But I'm bummed.
And on that abysmal note...
Yes. We should probably end it there. Thank you to anybody who's still listening and didn't give up at the first tangent about Rita Ora or whatever the hell the first tangent was.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you tune in next time to hear us discuss in detail, in violent detail it seems, Hereditary and possibly Midsommar.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, that's the end. Catch you next time.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye.